Welcome to the Six Figure Developer Podcast. I am John Calloway. Clayton is unable to join us today, but with us we have Kenneth Truyers. Kenneth is a freelance .NET developer and Microsoft MVP. He's Belgian, lives in Spain, and works in London. He has a blog where he writes about .NET, web technology, and Microsoft Azure. Welcome, Kenneth.
Hi there. How are you?
Good. Thanks for asking. So, Kenneth, how did you come to be a Belgian living in Spain and working in London?
So yeah, I grew up in Belgium and went to university there. And I studied electronics. And then I noticed that that wasn't really my kind of thing and got into software development, worked in Belgium for a few years. And then I decided that I wanted to explore a bit. So I decided to move to Spain and continued my developer career there. So first lived in Spain, worked at some Spanish companies, and I met someone from the UK here. We hit it off and he had a startup, so I decided to take the plunge and start working with him. And then from there, I kind of rolled into the London startup scene. And obviously knowing more people, you then get into that scene and through contacts. And now I still develop in London from home and I live in Spain, so it's a weird situation, but I just kind of rolled into it.
So would you recommend that type of path for others?
Well, I think that path is probably something that, you know, it just happens. And that's probably a path that everyone has to find for himself. But yeah, whatever comes up your road, just make the best of it, I think, and find your own way. For me, it was this, but I think it's highly unlikely that someone would pick the same path.
So you have a blog where you write about .NET and web technologies. Have you always been interested in web technologies and specifically .NET, or how did your career come about?
Yeah, so as I said in the beginning, well, I studied electronics. Now, when I was doing electronics, I noticed very sudden that to make systems work, you also have to be a bit handy with the soldering, and that was not my cup of tea, so in one of the projects we worked on, I was charged with developing the software for it, and that immediately clicked with me. And after university, I took another course on .NET. That was in the early days of .NET, .NET 1 and 1.1. And then from there, it just kind of took off. I started immediately with web development and then got into the front-end bits as well. And then later with rise of cloud technology, started working in those things as well. So I've been since the beginning of my career with .NET, and then also in front end to complement the web part of it. So yeah, I've been mostly in web dev.
Now I know you have quite an interest in Azure. How did you get involved in all things Azure and platform as a service?
Yeah, so it was actually a couple of years ago when I first started in London. We used to have this big server park with a specialized operations team, then the developers team, and you know, the usual back and forth between us and them. And we decided to take a look into Azure. And in the beginning, we started out with infrastructure as a service. So we had the same thing we had before. It was just in the cloud now. And then when the tooling actually matured around Azure, we decided to take the plunge and go with web apps. And we immediately noticed like an increase in productivity, the ability to self-manage your infrastructure as a developer, and then merging development and operations into one team gave us a lot of advantages. So we continued with that and then started building our infrastructure on top of that. And the ability to scale as well was a big advantage for us. And I've continued down that path as well with other companies that were already in Azure, and then adding more items on top of our basic web stack of Azure web apps.
So what are the main key ideas to keep in mind when working in the cloud, when architecting your applications? What are the things to keep in mind as you're planning your move to the cloud or planning for the application to be hosted in an Azure or an AWS or something like that?
Yeah, I think most of the same rules still apply for scalability. And specifically, if you're thinking about web apps, the important thing to note there is that you don't have the full control over the machine anymore. So there are some application guidelines that you have to make sure that you're not depending on machine-specific settings. And if you design your application from the ground up, it's actually rather easy not to depend on those things. Whereas if that constraint is not there, it's possible that you might get sucked into a way of depending on specific settings of a machine, a specific setup. Now, the advantage that I've seen is that because in cloud, you actually can't control these things. So they give you the specific constraints and you work around them. And that makes it then very portable between different services. But these constraints are the most important thing to keep in mind when you start developing for cloud. Now, another way is when you have your existing application and you want to lift and shift it to the cloud. Now, in those cases, you might have pre-existing constraints that were added in way before you started thinking about moving to the cloud. And there you have to employ kind of a different strategy in that these applications are not what they call like cloud native. So there it might be a good idea to start with infrastructure as a service and then slowly refactor your application into a platform as a service app. And you can do that by simply splitting out small parts that are not depending on specific infrastructure. And I think that's a good way to start moving from bare metal to virtualized or cloud applications, just by splitting out small parts bit by bit until you actually have moved everything over, rather than doing a big rewrite and doing then everything immediately in the cloud.
For those interested in moving to the cloud or developing for the cloud from the ground up, what are the caveats around scaling an application? Do you focus on scaling parts of an application up or scaling parts of an application out? What are the ideas to keep in mind when thinking about scaling an application?
Well, when scaling an application, there are two different types of scaling, in my opinion. There's one where you hit a sudden surge, and that can be because your company decided to air a TV commercial. Now, for those surges, you can't really rely on automatic scaling because a scaling operation takes some time as well. So in those cases, you kind of have to preview that you're going to get a big spike and you need to scale your application beforehand. Another scaling use case is when you gradually over time start getting more users. And in those cases, you can scale your platform slower and can have it automatically scale under certain circumstances. Now, in terms of scaling up or scaling out, also that depends a bit on the type of application. So if you design your application from a point of view, and especially talking about web applications here, if you design an application that is completely stateless, then scaling out is definitely the way to go because it's very easy to add new servers without affecting your current infrastructure. Now, that's only the case if you're dealing with like lots of users with all small load. But there's also other applications where you have very few users, which have a high demand on computing power. Now, in those cases, it's better to scale up and get just more powerful machines because those workloads cannot be easily distributed. For workloads that are very difficult to distribute, the way to go is scaling up. And otherwise, I would say scaling out is easier to accomplish because you can add as many machines as you want.
Are there any concerns with threading when choosing one versus the other, or is that just something that would be managed for you, or is that something that you need to be thinking about as you're architecting your application?
Yeah, so in the same way that I mentioned before, so if you have an application that is easily parallelizable, then it's very easy to scale out. Now, if you have like high workloads for one specific user, then you do have to take into account that you can't really split that process very easily over multiple servers. And that is something that you have to take into account, you know, when you architect your application. So when architecting an application, I would always advocate for making it easy to separate into multiple smaller processes. But if that's not the case, then at the time of scaling, you do have to take into account that the only way you can scale is really by putting in more powerful machines.
So would it be fair to say that you would lean more towards microservices versus monolithic architectures, or would you characterize that a little differently?
Yeah, I think there's a lot of hype around microservices. And in my opinion, a lot is said about microservices without actually, you know, looking at it from an application point of view. And there is certain disadvantages about microservices that are not talked about a lot. So, and in my opinion, there are definitely applications that benefit from microservices, but there's also applications that benefit more from the monolith approach. And the monolith and microservices are two extremes of a larger scale, I think. And there's something in right between what, you know, at our company we tend to call mini services, which is not exactly a microservice in that it's very small and just a few, you know, maybe 100 lines of code, but something that sits in between. And I think the most important part, and that's having a separation of concerns. So as long as you have an application that is standalone, then it doesn't really matter how big or how small it is. If you can separate it out, you should always separate it out. I see a lot of problems with microservices occurring when people try to split up things that are not actually ready to be split up. And then you get into a problem with deployments, with how you scale things, because, you know, the two things hang really together, but they're deployed separately. So how do you coordinate all of that? And that's where a lot of the issues in microservices come from. So I advocate more of a pragmatic approach where your application determines the size of the things that you split out and not the technology, which determines how you split up things.
Now, you recently had a great blog post on Git as a NoSQL database. Can you explain more to the audience about what exactly that is?
Yeah, so that whole idea grew from a specific problem that we had at the company I currently work at, Epi Parking. So we deal with parking data, and believe it or not, but there's actually a whole lot of parking spaces in very small areas. So we currently deal with the entirety of the UK for all parking data. Now, parking data comes from local councils, from CSV files, from a variety of sources that are completely different in nature. And our problem was that we had to put all of this data together and then expose it as like a single data set. Now, the issue was that whenever we imported data into our system, it could be the wrong data. And then we had to back it out and do it again. And every time that we had to do that, we had to take like backups of our database, but backups of like 20, 30 gigs. So you can imagine that that becomes very cumbersome after a while, because you make a code change and then you have to do a backup of 20 gigabytes, then restore it. So, and we were thinking like, we want to stage our changes to data. And that's how in the beginning we developed the system. And what we were trying to do was replicate Git. And after a while talking about it, there was, you know, the first joke like, hey, we need Git for our data. And the joke became more serious after a while. And we started doing some spikes and we saw that Git actually works as a data store. And we then built some tooling on top of that. some very rudimentary tools to verify our ideas. And we've now been using that for quite a few months, and this is actually working quite nicely in that we are able to do data restores of gigabytes within a time span of milliseconds, merge huge data sets of gigabytes together in milliseconds, which used to take us days to recover or to merge. So, and actually I learned quite a lot about the internals of Git, because using Git, the way you use it as a code management tool, that didn't fit 100% the use case. So we had to bend it a little bit to make it do what we wanted to do it. And it's been very interesting road to getting Git to work like that. And it's a powerful tool actually for us right now.
So it started as a joke and really kind of grew into a feasible solution to the problem that you had.
Yeah, exactly. I think one of the first things was some developer like getting really fed up by this huge backups. They said like, oh man, I wish I could just create a branch and then put all my data back in. And everyone laughed a bit like, yeah, that would be great. But, you know, Git is not going to work for that. You know, it can't handle those amounts of data. And then, you know, until someone said like, well, why not try it? Because we noticed that we try to implement a different data store on top of Azure Storage, and then trying to replicate the entire way that Git works. And then we just said like, well, why reinvent the wheel? You know, let's just go serious about it and try it in Git itself.
So before that, were you just using a regular relational database, or were you using another version of a NoSQL database, a MongoDB or Cosmos? Or
so like I said, we tried to create our own type of data store. Underneath of that was Azure Table Blob Storage in combination with Elasticsearch. Yeah, we use different data stores to replicate that kind of behavior. But you can imagine the complexity those things bring with it. So that's why we needed a simpler solution.
So what other concerns or what other issues did you encounter when you started towards using Git as a viable option? Were there large changes to your architecture to accommodate that? Or how did you make that transition towards Git?
Yeah, so in terms of switching our application to use Git was actually not such a big problem. And that was because the application was actually quite well decoupled from the data store. So in that aspect, we were quite, it was quite easy to switch. Issues that we encountered was usually to do with scaling. So if you have Git and you create commits, well, Git is not really made to write a whole lot of data at the same time. So there's no programmer who can create 1,000 commits per second. But turns out that if you have an application that does that, well, then Git starts to crumble a bit under the load. So we did a lot of research for that and looked into what's the most optimal way to write into Git. So we had to find out how Git works internally to say like, right, if we do our writing and create our commits in a slightly different way, this is actually more optimal and you can get better write speeds. And also we noticed that while for our use case, Git is actually a really good solution, it's definitely not a general purpose database. So it has its use cases, but I would definitely not recommend it for any type of application. But in the context of a content-heavy application, and content-heavy, I'm talking about things like wikis or blogs, things like that, it can actually be a very good tool because it gives you a lot of things out of the box that you don't have to program anymore. Things such as versions, recovery, backups, staging of changes. You can imagine a blog where you stage a blog post, but you don't want it to go live until you merge it into master. And those things all come out of the box, and you have all the Git tooling available to work on that. So that's really nice about having Git as a database.
So maybe not a solution for a write-heavy application, but certainly seems to be working for you as kind of a read-heavy application?
Actually, I wouldn't say read-heavy, because there's also issues on the read side. I would say it's not the best solution if you have a very high demand on the writes per second. So in terms of a write database, is actually quite good, because you never lose any changes, because all the changes are committed to the history. Now, if you want 10,000 writes per second, then yeah, probably Git is not going to cut it. But in my experience, 80% of the applications I've worked with are actually fine with, let's say, 500 writes per second. I think the majority of applications can do with that. In terms of the read performance is actually quite decent, except that you don't have all the querying capabilities of, let's say, a NoSQL store, Elasticsearch, things like that. So in that aspect, we chose for a separate write and a read store. So we write to Git, and then using the concept of Git hooks, we denormalize that data into a NoSQL database, which allows for full text search and all query capabilities that you're usually used to in databases.
So moving into getting these applications into Azure, what has been your experience in continuous deployment or into moving these applications to the cloud?
Yeah, so I'm a big fan of having the deployment process completely automated, because I think manual deployments or very supervised deployments tend to go wrong. We as a company and in previous companies that I've been, we've always bet on completely automating your deployment pipeline. And when I say automating it completely, I mean scripting it so that you can run the same build on your local machine as well as on the build server, and then have the same deployment process for your QA or test environment as well as for your production environment. So we've been using various tools for that. Internally, we've written build scripts that are based on conventions, so that even if you have microservices or you have a whole lot of different applications, that you don't have to think about the build process every time you want to create a new deployment process. It just happens by convention. And so I've done a course on that on Pluralsight, on how to automate such a pipeline. And I really like the tool Octopus Deploy or anything deployment related, because it gives you a nice overview of everything that is deployed, which versions, who did what, and the ability to easily install whatever application you want at any point in time. And it gives that same visibility not only to developers, but also to testers or business if they want to see it. So it takes a bit away the technicalities of the deployment and abstracts it so that it's visible throughout the entire company, which I think is a nice plus.
And what was the title of your Pluralsight course?
Yeah, so I actually have two courses on Pluralsight regarding deployment pipelines. One is around building a deployment pipeline for .NET applications, and that's where I take viewers through the entire process of setting up build scripts, running them on continuous integration services, and then deploying them into Azure. And then there's another one, deploying using Octopus Deploy, which goes a bit more into the technical aspect of Octopus Deploy and all the different options you have in that tool. So there are two different courses, but around the same subject.
Do you have any advice or suggestions on those that have already moved their applications to Azure in terms of application management, health tracking, any logging, things like using Application Insights, or there are other tools available to check on the health and status of your application in Azure?
Yeah, so in Azure itself, you have Application Insights, which is a very nice tool in that it's all pre-built, and it's kind of like a click away to enable all of these things. Now, because in our case, we have multiple environments. So we also have external data that we need to monitor. And there we found it a bit more difficult to use Application Insights. So in that case, we're using the Elk stack. So Elasticsearch, Logstash, and Kibana. And I think that's also a very nice stack, especially if you need to go outside of Azure as well. So within Azure, Application Insights is actually very easy because it's a very small setup and very quick to do. In our case, because of the scale we have and the difference in types of applications, we went with the Elk stack because we wanted a bit more control over what is logged and how detailed we do our logging. So, but both are good options. It depends a bit on the kind of environment that you're in.
And do you have any other resources or any suggestions to those looking to get involved in Azure, or what advice might you have to those just getting started?
Yeah, so I have on my blog, you can read the entire post on how we got about it and all the problems we encountered, the solutions we found for it, and when you actually shouldn't use it, because that's equally important as when to use it. And further than that, our code, we decided to open source everything. So that's on our GitHub repo, so you can check out the code. And next month, I'll also be giving a talk on Git as in NoSQL database on CodeMotion in Madrid. So for everyone who's around, I advise you to come. And it's still a two-way process because we started with this and we have the use cases that we have ourselves, but we are very open to see if people can use and abuse Git in more interesting ways so that we can all learn from that.
So in addition to your talk in Madrid on November 24th, do you have any other exciting things upcoming, any speaking engagements or any other?
We have some with the local community here in Mallorca. We have some interesting talks coming up around .NET Core, as well as Jammer and Dev Days, which is not something I'm very... No, I don't know much about that, but there's some very smart colleagues here in the community that are going to set up some of these events, and it's shaping up to become a really good time now to do talks here in Mallorca and to see all people come together. Yeah, I hope to visit the MVP Summit again, I think in March or April, I think it's planned now. So I hope to be there again. It was great being there last year and connecting with everyone. It's definitely interesting, and there's a lot to learn there from people and seeing how everything is built and being able to participate in that process.
All right, Kenneth, thanks so much for being a guest. Appreciate you joining us on the Six Figure Developer Podcast.
Thanks for having me.
That was Kenneth Trujers. Kenneth is a freelance .NET developer and Microsoft MVP. He's Belgian, lives in Spain, and works in London. He also has a blog where he writes about .NET, web technology, and Microsoft Azure. This has been the Six Figure Developer Podcast. I'm John Calloway.